There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Roka Report podcast in association with the Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav back after a bit of a week, really. This is the second time we've attempted to do this. So apologies for the lateness, but we are back in the aftermath of what was a pretty hefty old week last week with loads going on at Sunderland. And with there being the international break, it feels like a good time to sit and take stock of what was a mad end to last week and quite the start of this one. So join us as Chris. Hiya, mate.
Hello, Gav. Yes, I think the last time I spoke to you was we kind of signed off on transfer deadline night. And we were very grateful to the club for announcing everything after we'd finished.
Nice, you know? Yeah, we done the Twitter space on deadline day, didn't we? And by the point I had to sign off, because my throat was about to collapse, we still hadn't announced a couple of signings, a couple of outgoings hadn't been announced. Yeah. But we knew what was coming, and we will talk about that today. But it's because, like I said, it was a bit of a week. I feel like we've almost got to segment this podcast into two bits. We've got all of the transfer stuff, which we can't not cover off. So much happened on deadline day, and so much has happened in the aftermath of that week. But also, we battered Southampton 5-0, which nobody saw coming. Absolutely nobody saw coming. You felt like Sunderland might win, but you never said we'd win 5-0.
Oh, I didn't say 5. Who's going to say 5-0?
But, I mean, I've got to admit, I didn't watch the game live. My season ticket seat went unused as I was at a wedding with another season ticket holder and a bunch of other season ticket holders who you can imagine were all absolutely devastated to have missed the game. But on Sunday, I did catch up with it. I watched the full coverage back from Sky. So there was that benefit. At least I feel like I was there, but it's not quite the same. People have been coming up to us and saying, oh, I bet you enjoyed that at the weekend, did you? And I've had to caveat it with, well, I did, but I didn't see it live, did I? I missed the bloody match. But yeah, nobody saw that coming. 5-0 against Southampton, a team who most pundits are tipping to win the league. Lots of people are looking at the transfer business and saying they've done really well. Lots of people are looking at the manager and saying he's the perfect man for the job and they play this great style of football and all the rest of it. And to be honest, in my opinion, it's almost as though Southampton believed their own hype a bit too much and came into that game totally underestimating Sunderland, who from the off knew exactly how to pick Southampton apart. And I think Russell Norton actually said it after the game. He said, you know, when you're 2-0 down after 7 minutes, your plan kind of goes out the window. And it was perfect, because I think if you're going to beat a team like Southampton, who like to retain the ball, pass it quickly, and just bore you to death, I guess, with possession, the way to get around that is literally just to hit them hard early doors, because they've got absolutely no answer to it. They've got no other way of playing. And from that point on, you kind of control proceedings, and that's exactly what we did. And if anything, they are very, very fortunate that we didn't put another 3 or 4 goals in the back of the net and it wasn't a complete rout. But again, 5-0 against a team as hotly tipped as Southampton has got to go down as one of the best results we've had in years, in my opinion. I think it was an absolutely brilliant result.
Yeah, no, I looked at Southampton before the game and I thought we'd get at them. I thought we had a good chance. But I did, like I said, I mean, didn't see 5-0 coming, no chance. And it's interesting because it was a really bizarre start to the game. I mean, well, bizarre first minute, because it was only after 10 seconds that Dennis Sirkin had the ball in the left-back position and got hemmed in. Southampton high press all over Sirkin like a rash, won the ball back on the edge of our box and forced a corner after like 10 seconds. And I thought, oh, we're in for an afternoon here. And then we cleared that corner and went up and scored after 52 seconds or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, so from going within a minute of kickoff thinking, poof, you know, it's going to be tough today. You know, they're going to have this high press. They're going to be up for it. And then suddenly we took the lead. And literally that was game over. Southampton just buckled. And as you said, I mean, they went back to, they kind of reverted back to the their kind of possession-based football, which they've done all season. We talked about the possession stats last time. We talked them on the spaces as well. I mean, like 80% at Sheffield Wednesday, and they reverted straight to that. But and it was something I mentioned, it might have been on the spaces, might have been on the last pod, but we're the type of team, because that was the first time we've taken the lead this season. And you could
is that
kind
right?
of tell.
I never knew that. Bloody hell.
Yeah, because that was the first time we've actually kind of brought in the deadlock and gone into the lead first. And I mentioned this last time, that's the type of team we are. Once we get on the front foot and we get that big confidence, we're just away. Like, I don't think any team in the league, once we get our tails up, I don't think any team in the league could stop us. It's just getting to that starting point. And once we did, there was only one winner. But Southampton, I mean, like you said, Russell Martin, I was laughing my head off when he came out with his interview, because he was really pissed off, because after we took the lead, I don't think they put a foot in for the rest of the game. They just sat off us and watched it. And I mean, Ekwa's two goals were perfect examples. They just watched him do it.
Pretty much every goal was like that. And I'll be honest, I think I've said this a few times, but I just don't get it with Russell Martin. I think these managers who come along in the flavour of the month, he's got to have something to back it up with. And he did nothing at MK Dons. He did nothing with Swansea. I just don't see why I'm supposed to be impressed by this bloke, because his team keeps the ball. Nothing I've seen from Southampton are impressive. They've got a really, I wouldn't say experienced, possibly experienced, but expensively assembled team. And, you know, you look right throughout that team, that paid big money for most of those players. They've brought in players this summer who've got Premier League experience, you know, Mason Holgate, who has played, what, 7-8 seasons in the top flight with Everton. Flynn Downs coming from West Ham. You've got Adam Armstrong up front, who bagged for fun in this league when he was at Blackburn. They've brought in quite a few players from Manchester City for money. Stuart Armstrong's a really experienced goal-scoring midfield player. Kyle Walker-Peters has played in the Premier League for a while. Bazunu, the goalkeeper, costs a lot of money. You look at the bench, they had a Rebo.
He was crap.
Yeah, he was. Shea Adams, who nearly went back to the Premier League on deadline day. Carlos Alcaraz, who played most of last season for them. Shea Charles, who they paid a fortune for from Man City. Ryan Fraser, who we know all about, has spent a number of years with Newcastle and played against us in the Premier League. Taylor Harwood-Bellis on the bench, who never even got on. He was possibly, arguably, the best centre-half in the league last year, playing for Burnley on loan. This is a team of championship superstars, really, when you look at it on paper. But it means absolutely nothing if they're not up for the fight. And we saw this when we dropped the League One, in that some of these players who come down from the Premier League, when they get into the rough and tumble of the league they're dropping into, they're just not up for the fight. And we wanted it more. I think, like you say, Russell Martin mentioned it. He was talking about when Bennett, for the last goal, managed to do three pirouettes without anybody touching him and then cross the ball. And then he says, you look down the other end and Trey Hume's putting people on their arse. And it's like, yeah, that's because our players are motivated and championship ready. I look at Southampton and I'm very unimpressed. I think if they do get going, and I'm sure they will at some point, it'll be in the later part of the season when they've actually shipped a few more of these players out, because they just looked completely rudderless and they look more like the Southampton team I watched in the Premier League last year, who were terrible defensively and just couldn't stop conceding goals. They've got a long way to go.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more about Martin, because, I mean, you look at some of the stats during the game. 35 minutes in, you know, we were 2-0 up and Southampton had 67% of the ball. And then there was another one in the second half. There was about 15 minutes left on the clock, 4-0 down, but they'd had 71% possession in the second half. I mean, what's the point? What's the point if you're going to keep the ball but do nothing with it? And, I mean, just talking about the difference between the two sides, like you said, 1-0 down, 2-0 down, Southampton weren't putting a block in. I mean, I think it got called out at half-time, someone waving a leg at Ekwa's shot that led to his first goal, which I think was ended up giving an own goal. But yeah, Southampton were just kind of waving legs at it, couldn't be bothered. And the difference was, there was a point in the game where we were 4-0 up and Trey Hume and Dan Ballard were throwing themselves in front of the ball to keep a clean sheet at 4-0 up. I mean, and that's a difference. And you're right. I mean, a lot of, and I think Martin might have touched on it, like they're going to have to get used to coming to sides like Sunderland and thinking they're just going to roll teams over by keeping the ball. And we played it perfectly. I mean, that first goal was a perfect example. A corner for Southampton, we pumped it clear, Barr was onto it, and the amount of players supporting him, I mean, and Barr did brilliant, switched it, and then Hume crossed to the back post. But it was a perfect example where Southampton thought, ah, oh, we're going to waltz this, we've got a corner first 10 seconds, and kind of, you know, less than a minute later, we've gone one up. So yeah. It's a good example of the way we're playing as well. And some of the differences we're going to bring in this season with catching teams like that on the break, which I think we'll see more than we did last season.
Yeah, well, Christian Speakman's interview, which he did with the club during the week, he talked about how we've recruited players to be able to play more than one way. You know, he says, you know, at our heart, we are a possession team. But as you saw against Southampton, we can also play really well on the counter-attack. And I think I said this to you a few times last season in pods. I actually think when we come up against teams who try and play football against us, we are so much more effective because the players we've got are really well equipped for playing counter-attacking football. We saw it here. I mean, this was us at our best. And like I say, nobody saw it coming. But at the same time, I kind of did. I did feel like there was a performance like this coming. I think some of the players have talked about it in the lead-up to the game, maybe even a couple of weeks ago. But I think Ballard did an interview and Ekwa might have done an interview where they were talking about how, you know, we weren't worried about the first two losses because we actually played really well and at some point it was going to click. I mean, I don't think we expected it to click quite like this. But at the same time, we've threatened this type of performance. And again, I think I said this the other week, we maybe lost our mojo from the end of last season a little bit in them first couple of games because the momentum was gone. But that ability's still there. That ability to cut teams open and score goals at will is there. You know, we've learned better than perhaps any team in my mind for a long time how to play without a striker. Five goals in a team who didn't have a centre forward on the pitch. It's, you know, it's quite exquisite, really. It's about as well as I've seen Sunderland play at this level. I would have to think back, you know, as far back as I can go and remember a performance where we were quite as clinical against a team like this, even into the Peter Reid years. I can't remember many performances as well oiled and as slick as this where we just looked relentless.
Yeah, and it was interesting, actually. I think you might have touched on it there, but straight after the game, I think it was when Ekwa was given Jack Clark his Man of the Match trophy, which I think he was a little bit miffed off about. I think he thought
more than a little bit. Yeah, even Mowbray mentioned it, didn't he? Yeah,
I think he was probably moping in the dressing room that he didn't get it. But with the interview with those two, I can't remember which one. I'm pretty sure it was Jack Clark who turned around and said, repeated basically just what you've said there, that the players expected it, the players that knew that there was a performance like this coming. And straight away when he said it, Ekwa started kind of visibly nodding. So it's obviously something they've all talked about and they've all kind of realised it was coming. You know, none of us saw this coming. But by their reactions, I think the players did. But the interesting thing was from Mowbray was he was talking about his half-time team talk. And I thought it was interesting where he said, you know, because I think all these players, the pressure's been building up a little bit and they've all been waiting for this performance coming. Going in at half-time, 3-0 up, and Mowbray said he had to basically calm them all down. Like they were basically kind of partying in the dressing room. And he had to remind themselves, you know, about Burnley last season when they came back from two down at the stadium like at half-time and all that sort of stuff. And we talk about the age of our players and all this sort of stuff. You know, a lot of them have never been in this position at this level. You know, going in half-time, 3-0 up and against a team like Southampton. So it's interesting that Mowbray, when you think about how Mowbray has to manage these players, he's kind of thinking about, you know, he's managing these kids, some of them are just kids really, through situations that they've never been in before. Their reaction is to, you know, think it's great and kind of go over the top. And Mowbray has to keep bringing them back down. But the other thing you mentioned there was Speakman's interview. And we talked on the Spaces on Transfer Deadline Day about what I thought was, when you write out the squad and you look at their positions and you look at what we've got, it looks top heavy in that kind of attacking midfielder role. And it's trying to understand it. And we were talking about Pritchard staying and Dak coming in and thinking it's a bit of a strange one. We've seen that have a lot of players there. But as you said, what you described Speakman is talking about with that kind of front line, he was saying we don't really necessarily want to play with that focal point up front. He seems to want to play with a bunch of attacking midfielders who can get goals, but are all interchangeable and can go wide, they can come central, they can swap, they can switch. So we haven't got necessarily that player who stays out wide on the right, that player who stays wide on the left, that person who stays at, you know, furthest point, furthest up the field. So it's starting to make sense why we're kind of top heavy in that position, because it looks like basically that's how we're going to play. We're not going to have a true striker who just stands on the halfway line and stands on the last man.
Yeah, and we'll go into it maybe a bit more when we talk about the transfer business, but you're right. I think it shows the fluidity in the ranks, really, that we've got so many players who can not only play in a fluid system but get goals. Like at some point in the game, Dan Neal was the furthest player forward, you know what I mean? It's nice to see that they're all taking up the mantle of the furthest forward player. And we've signed players who I would imagine they've got plans for to do a similar job. And of course, you've got to have a focal point in some games. You've got to have your Hermiers and your Burstos and all the rest of it. But yeah, it's just nice to have that variety, isn't it? And obviously, even in the game, the variety of the goals that we scored, they were all very, apart from maybe both of Ekwazo, were very different goals, all of them. And it's just nice to see that we're so well-rounded. I mean, we might as well, there's five goals and I don't want to go in depth on all of them. But the first one, Clarks, you mentioned how it went down before. We kind of counter-attacked. Barr played it across to Hume, who played a nice cross out of his feet, and Clark came around the back of the defender. I think it was, I don't know who it was, who was tracking back, but they had no idea he was there. Clark heads it in. Don't see many headers from Jack Clark, but he can score them, because I think he scored one against Coventry at the start of last season as well. Second goal from Ekwaz, backing off a little bit, Southampton, and he sees his spot and takes it, and yeah, it gets a bit of a deflection, but it must have been on target because he's been credited with the goal, I think. I know you said before it maybe went down as an own goal, but what I've got in front of us here has him down as the goal scorer. I don't know if it's been chalked off or not. The third one was a bit more clean from Ekwa, but it's similar kind of position. He just, you know, you think they would have learned their lesson by that point, but Ekwa takes the shot on, and it's a cleaner strike straight into the bottom corner, catches everybody off guard, including the goalkeeper. We go on at half-time 3-0 up. Bouncing, like you say, but we had to come out and be professional, and that's what we did 2 minutes into the second half. A nice little move. To be honest, I'm a little bit gutted that Dak's first effort never went in, because it would have been a nice goal. Close range header, which was saved by Bazunu. It ends up with Abdullah Barr, who plays a lovely ball straight through a bunch of bodies, and Dak scored the kind of goal that I think was described to us when he signed, that sort of just being in the right place at the right time. And finishing it fairly well, you know, he gets it and makes it 4-0. And by that point, Southampton have got to be thinking it's game over. We, you know, from there on, just completely dominate the game, in my opinion, with the important stuff. Maybe not in possession, but when it mattered, we dominated and we still created chances, and it could have been more. And then there's that moment right at the end of the game, by which point Southampton have totally switched off. They just want the whistle to go. Jewison Bennett, you've got to give him credit. The first two were outrageous pirouettes on the ball. The third one, totally unnecessary, but he gets away with it, ends up passing it, receives it back, plays a cross out of his feet. And I've said this to a couple of people since. I think he's probably the best crosser of the ball at the club, because he just has this pin. We've talked about it. You know, if he had people to hit in the box, he'd have loads of assists by now. And there's been moments where he's had nobody to hit and you felt a little bit sorry for him. But he plays a cross, and it's very similar to the one that he played against Coventry away last season, where Ahmad scored. Just loops this ball over to the far side of the box, and Chris Rigg wants it more than every Southampton player around him, basically, and scores it. He's 5'8", he's 16-year-old. If you're one of them Southampton players, you've got to be ashamed, really, that you're allowing that to happen. But Rigg wants it more than they do. Plays on to the end of it. Lovely header. Gets the fifth goal. Gets that moment. The crowd goes absolutely mental. It was great on the coverage to see the celebrations on the bench, as the players are watching the goal back on the monitor, seeing how it all went down. You can see the lads are delighted, not just for Rigg, but for Bennett, because of the ball in he plays and the couple of tricks he does before it. And I mean, that was the cherry on top of the cake. It couldn't have been more perfect. Five goals there, Chris. Which was the best? Which was your favourite? Do you have a favourite?
It's got to be the last one. That's the favourite. Just for so many reasons. Just for Bennett doing his thing and Rigg doing his thing. 16-year-old lad polishing off a 5-0 win. I mean, it just not necessarily for the actual football, but just for everything that it kind of represented. I think that was my favourite. But I mean, you talked about Southampton being done by then. I think they were done after 52 seconds. I think if they'd had the choice, they would have packed their bags and headed back off then. I think and it was interesting, actually, that the difference between the goals, because I think, again, it's kind of summing us up a little bit. Like those first two goals, as we touched on earlier, came from us on the counter and playing longer, more direct balls forward. And it was interesting both times that it was Barr who was the out ball. And I think we should, I mean, he wasn't a world beater on the day, but I think we have to call out Barr's performance. Because
we were critical of it. We were critical of him the other week, and you're totally right.
And because he had a big part to play in those first two goals, he was the out ball, and he actually had the composure. You were talking about that pass to Bellingham against Coventry that he should have played. Mm-hmm. And this time, but it's from a 19-year-old kid, gets another chance. And this time he's got a bit of composure about him. He held the ball up, played the right pass at the right time, and we ended up getting two goals. And like you said, that ball in from Hume did walk. I think it was Walker Peters at the back post. That Clark kind of, he was completely asleep, and Clark nipped in. But those two first goals, like I said, came from that counter-attack. And then the third one, when Echo picked up the ball, it was because we were pressing so high up the pitch. That combined with Holgate being absolutely crap on the ball meant Ekwa was in a perfect position just to pick it up. And it's interesting with him scoring two long-range shots that I love it when he does it, and I love it that he's got it in his locker. But I think we have to keep in mind that Bazuna was absolutely crap, and he looked crap all afternoon. But I just hope Ekwa doesn't do it too much. I hope he picks the right moments to do it. I hope it doesn't become one of these things where every time he gets it, he thinks he has to take a shot.
Like Chris Megan.
Where it becomes one of those things, you know.
Because he scored two long range, so you know the crowd's going to be shouting it. And as soon as they get that encouragement from the crowd, you know what's going to happen, don't you? But
If he can use it, like start using it with his advantage, you know, where opposition sides think he's always going to shoot, he can slip someone in or something like that. But yeah, I just hope he kind of picks the right times. But yeah, I mean, that combination of goals, catching teams on the counter and pressing a side who wants to keep the ball, I mean, it just bodes well for moving forward. And, you know, the fourth goal, it was nice to see Dak get that goal. And it was interesting as well, listening to Mowbray talk about Dak. It's not necessarily what you think about Bradley Dak, was it? What Mowbray was talking about, getting in the 6-yard box. Mm-hmm. I don't think I thought Dak would actually do that type of thing. I thought he was like, you know, would hang back on the edge of the box and kind of make things happen. So it'll be interesting to see how much he gets into the 6-yard box like he did to score that fourth. Mind, he should have scored that header. You were right. He should have scored first time. Keeper shouldn't have had a... I don't think keeper knew much about it.
I think he was maybe just a bit too close, wasn't he? Possibly.
Yeah, but it was Barr again. Barr again who put the ball back in for Dak. So we've got to call him. I mean, you could call out all the players, but... for the stick Barr got at Coventry, I think it's worth mentioning. But yeah, and the fifth, I mean, yeah, like I said, already my favourite goal of the afternoon. And I loved afterwards Bennett going to 09 and Rigg going to 09 as well. It seems like 09's kind of
giving everyone piggybacks, wasn't he?
Well, he's like the dad of all the young kids, isn't he? I think they kind of, they all go to him. And
well, just on a more serious note, I actually think that's one of the things that, I mean, I love lots about Luke 09. But he makes a point of keeping the squad players involved. He will talk, even if you think back to last season when Rigg, I think it was the Shrewsbury game in the cup, when Rigg won the corner. All he did was win a corner. It was first appearance for Sunderland, came on, won a corner, and we scored from it. And there was an interview with 09 after the game, and the first thing he wanted to do was praise Chris Rigg and his contribution to the... And I just think that's one of the many good things he brings to the table, is that he recognises, maybe less so Rigg, because Rigg's, you know, he's still being introduced slowly, but like Bennett, he can obviously see how hard he's trying to impress every day in training, improving his English and when he comes on the pitch, trying to contribute. And 09 made a point of spotlighting him. And I just think that's great because that shows how good the team spirit is at the minute. You know, particularly with players moving on, which we're going to get onto soon, but particularly with players moving on from the group who were leaders, people have got to step up and take up the mantle of leader. And I think in this game, that was exemplified in many of the performances. You know, 09, Ballard, Hume, they're still young players. You know, 09's not a grander, is he? But he, you know, he feels like one in this team. But a lot of these lads who are actually still young, you know, even Dan Neal's another one. Patterson being, I know he's not the most vocal, but he's actually out of the younger group, one of the older ones. Now he's 23-year-old, which just seems mad. But that's how young the team is. But, you know, when you look at the team on the pitch, and this, I talked about this, it might have been on the Twitter space last week again. You know, I don't think experience trumps leadership. I think leadership trumps experience. And that's what Sunderland have gone for. We've got a team of players now who are actually quite experienced given the fact they're still quite young. The likes of your Dan Neals and Patterson's and Ballard's and all the rest of them. They've been in playoff finals. They've played in playoff semi-finals. You know, they've got experience. And what's happened is players have left. They've stepped up to the plate and went, right, now I'm a leader. I've got to be the leader of, you know, if Dan Ballard's 23-year-old, I think, and Patterson's 23-year-old and Hume might be 21 or whatever, 22. They're actually, in some cases, 4, 5, 6 years older than some of these players. That's like, so they are technically experienced and older, and there's nothing wrong with making those players take up a leadership role in the squad. And again, like I say, in this game, I felt like a lot of those players who traditionally would be classed as the young'uns, aren't young'uns really, added that little bit of experience on the pitch, which is maybe lacking with the departures of several other players who went the day before.
No, you're right. And actually, I was going to mention it, actually, Dan Neal, when we were talking about him. If you look now this season, he's really stepped up in how vocal he is on the pitch.
Would you say since the season started, he's been probably the most consistent player?
Well, I think we had a question on the spaces, didn't we, about who I think somebody said, who is the player that we're glad we've kept hold of? And my answer was Dan Neal.
Yeah,
you know, Jack Clark and Patrick Roberts, they get all of the, you know, the spotlight because of some of the magic they pull off, and that's fair enough. But Dan Neal, I think he was vital, especially with the fact that I see the squad as having been kind of two real kind of what I consider to be central midfielders. I think it was vital we kept all of them. But like I said, he's not just stepped it up and he's all round player, because like you've said, Tony Mowbray has obviously told him to get further forward because he's playing 10 yards further up the pitch than he ever has. But if you look at him when the ball is out of play or when he's kind of organising, it's Dan Neal. Dan Neal's one of the biggest voices on the pitch now, organising the rest of the lads. And he's keeping Ekwa in check as well. As well as Ekwa's playing, you know, you're talking, what is it? Must be what, 15 senior games or something like that. Probably not even that. You know, he's only played. I mean, that was his first senior goal in senior professional football against Southampton, which is ridiculous because like the lad looks like he's been playing for 5, 6 years. The way he's playing.
This is the scary thing, isn't it, with him?
Yeah.
It's the scary thing is that he looks just so much further ahead than he should at this stage.
Yeah, and Dan Neal has to keep controlling them. And it was interesting, actually, because, I mean, we talk about all of our, like, how dominant we were. To be fair, there was a period between about 15 minutes and 25 minutes gone where Southampton had 10 minutes where actually they pinned us in a little bit and they looked like they were getting a goal. And I think it was during that time where actually Dak got really lucky and probably should have given a penalty away that was kind of, you know, it was a bit iffy. That could have went either way. Some refs would have given that. But to come out of that time, it was Dan Neal. And you looked how vocal he was on the pitch. He was trying to get us back up the pitch. And in the end, I remember it was about half an hour gone. And I think it was 09 who got the ball in the corner and got us out by playing, like switching the play. He did like a 40-yard diagonal to Jack Clark and then got us out. And it was a perfect example of what Luke 09 brings you at the back when he can play one of those balls and when we're under pressure and he can get us out. But yeah, there's obviously a vacuum being created by the players that we've lost in the Danny Barts, the Bailey Wrights, the Lyndon Gooches. But, and I think we've talked about it before as part of the recruitment, I think a huge part of that is the mentality of the players who we're bringing in. that they're all strong, you know, mentally, that they all can be leaders. None of them are kind of lads to kind of shy away. They all look like they can stand up. And I think that's kind of credit to the way we're doing the recruitment, because all of these players have been thrown in and they've all done a job.
Yeah, well, in the case of the players we've brought in, you know, I think it does make a huge difference when everybody knows what the club are trying to do. They're all bought in, then, aren't they? They're coming in and they know what we're trying to do, how we're trying to play, what we stand for, what we believe in. Like, I mean, we could sit here and talk all day about that, but it's clear that we're bringing in players with something in mind now. We're not just bringing in anybody. We're bringing in players because we want them to do a specific job in the team, because we feel like their values match ours. And this is the net result of that. And it's only going to improve that sort of relationship between what you say on the pitch and what you feel the club should stand for. And that's why it's very rare where I come away from a game and ever think we didn't try our best. To be honest, I can't even remember the last time where I've ever felt that. There was a time where that was the case every single week. I'd watch us and go, frick's sake, do any of these players even want to be here? Where now, you know, you're looking at it and we're actually nudging players out the door who are clawing desperately on to staying. And I guess that kind of segues us into the transfer talk, because that was certainly the case at the end of the window, in that, you know, there were players who maybe stayed who we tried to move on but couldn't, who wanted to stay. But there were players who left who would much rather have still been at Sunderland. And then there was obviously a handful who left because there were other motivations and all the rest of it. So I think ultimately, in my opinion, before we get in depth on each player, I feel like we've come out of the window better than we went into it. I feel like the squad looks a lot more flexible. It's younger still, but we've got more options across the pitch. I think Speakman in that interview talked about how we had better depth now, and that, I think that's certainly the case. I look at the players we brought in and they're all versatile and they're young and they're adaptable. And we don't know a lot about them individually yet because a lot of them haven't played yet, but it does excite us. I like the unknown. The fear, there's no fear in the unknown with me. I love it. I love looking at that list of players and going, I've never watched any of you play, but you just excite us for whatever reason. I feel excited about the potential of seeing them play for us. And that's where I am with sort of the overall business of the window is, yes, whilst some safe options went out of the door, I prefer the way we came out of it.
You know, I'm chuckling just because we could have probably, you know, just put the same pod out as we've done for the last few windows, but replaced the names for names. Because at the end of every window, what you've just said there sums it up, that you're excited about the signings because, A, you've never heard of them, but B, when you've read up about them, they sound exciting. That, you know, they're players either, you know, with pace, or they've had a good background, or, you know, whatever it is, and they're young and they've got potential. It's just all of these things that whenever we finish a transfer window, all these things are in the pot and you're looking at it going, I want to see these players play. I mean, Pembele, Oshish, if we're getting that right, I'm still not convinced, but Burstow, Rusin, Mayenda. I mean, that's five players just there that I'm really excited that we haven't even seen play yet in a red and white strip. I mean, I think the strange thing is the two centre-halves. I mean, they might get minutes at some point, but Dan Ballard and 09, you know, they're going to get suspended and injured at some point. So I'm almost excited to see them. They're still finding their feet in the kind of when they get minutes to the under 21s and stuff. Bishop as well. I reckon he's probably a cracking keeper, but I don't know when we're going to, you know, see him. We're out the League Cup, so I don't know how much we're going to see him. Good keeper as well. Good backup for Patterson. But yeah, I mean, you look at the players that we've gone, I mean, touched on them, kind of the Danny Barts, the Gooches, Embleton on loan, which is more of a recovery, it seems. And like Speakman said, I think they're going to review that in January to see where he is kind of fitness-wise, maybe an opportunity to bring him back if we've got a few injuries, see how that one pans out. Bailey Wright, Winchester, Diaku, the Hadji. You know, you look at that list of players who've left against, you know, the potential. And I say potential because, you know, if you try and pick our best side now over the international break, there's no point because, you're talking about five players who I've never seen play. So how can you know what our, I mean, you can do it on paper with, you know, based off the Southampton game, which is fine, you'd probably just go same again. But you've got five players there who I've mentioned who came in the window who are, you know, on paper, cracker backgrounds, look great, look good players, look good signings. Roosen probably come in for a bit of money as well. Yeah. I know it's all undisclosed, but I think we've spent a bit of coin on him. So, yeah, completely agree. The squad, again, it's all on paper at the minute. I just want to see these players play. And it's excitement at seeing them play. I just can't wait till the next game.
Yeah, well, let's start with the outs, because there's a few. We're only talking, by the way, about players who basically left around deadline day since we last did a podcast, because obviously we've already talked about the rest. But we'll start with Embleton, because you mentioned there, and Speakman explained it, you know, it's basically a rehab program. He's going to go there, get some minutes, because he wasn't going to play here. Interesting that, because Mowbray, maybe he was just being kind to Embleton in case he stayed, but Mowbray, a couple of days before Embleton left, was actually talking about the fact he might be in the squad for Southampton and that he fits the way we play and he likes him, and he's talking about how he's two-footed and all the rest of it. But the decision was taken to send him to Derby. To me, that's about as good a loan move as we could have got him, because I didn't think we were going to send him to a Championship team where he could be guaranteed minutes. I think he goes to Derby with a bit of pedigree, because he's got two promotions on his CV. You know, he's got a fair whack of experience at that level. He'll be going in there, he'll probably automatically be their best midfield player. So they're going to be willing to give him minutes and play him. But he does need time, because he's been out nearly a year. He's had a long, long old time out on the side. But that's a good move for Hamilton, isn't it, I think? Like you say, he gets to January and he's had a good first half of the season, and we're struggling a bit for numbers. There's a potential to bring him back. So for me, it's win-win across the board.
Yeah, it's a great move for him. And if I'm honest, I could see him moving permanently to Derby in mid-season. And as much as I like Embleton and I think he's good, I just think he's a real top-end League One player. And I think that's where he is. And I think it's more down to injuries than anything else. I think his talent-wise, he's probably above that. But I think his injuries have restricted him, have kind of restricted him to being a top end League One player. He's had so many injuries. I mean, I remember him getting injured away to Sheffield United in the Cup, away to Jack Ross, where he was coming through and everyone was excited about him. And then he got injured and he was out for ages then. And it's just been in and out with injuries since then. He's been really unlucky. He kind of needs a break, really. And you never know. I mean, I just think he'd do really well to get in this side. And I think Derby's a really good place for him. He'll do really well at Derby. Derby fans will love him. And good luck to him. We'll see what happens. But I'd be surprised if we saw him play again for Sunderland.
Yeah, and then there were the three outgoings on deadline day, permanent outgoings. They all deserve a bit of time to be talked about. I mean, let's start off with Danny Bart, last season's Fans Player of the Year. It was made very clear in the season that he was not featuring in Tony Mowbray's plans in terms of the best 11 on the pitch, the best defence. We certainly didn't see Danny Bart as part of those plans. I mean, on one side, you've got to say he was outstanding for us last season. Like I say, he was voted Fans Player of the Year. Had he been fit, we might be in the Premier League. That's how fine the margins were towards the end when it comes to the performances. We were desperate for somebody to head a ball in defence and he wasn't fit. But to me, it's the fact that he might not have recovered quite as well from that injury that I think plays into the thinking here. I watched him in pre-season. He didn't look great. He didn't look great at all. In that cup game, he didn't look great. I wonder maybe they've just looked at it. He's had a bad injury. By the time his deal was up, he'd be nearly 34-year-old. Have they looked at it with a year left on and went, I think now might be the right time for him to go while his stock's still fairly high, while he can still get a good move, while we can still get a bit of money for him. Big wages on the wage bill there because he was one of the highest earners. Was it just a case, right time to get rid, even though, you know, in a lot of fans' minds, he could have still contributed?
I think this one was a no-brainer all round. I think it was a good deal for everyone. I think, to be fair to the player, you're moving in the direction of going in Dan Ballard and Luke O'Neill at the back. And as good as he was last season, like you said, at 32, 33, soon last year your contract, as soon as you start picking up injuries, then another injury follows and another injury follows. And, you know, it's kind of that, you start going downhill at that point. People talk about keeping him as a squad player, but you've just brought in two 20-year-old centre-halves to get some minutes when Ballard and O'Neill are out. You've promised them minutes. You're going to say that they're going to, you know, you probably told them that they're going to play likely to play 10, 15 games this season. And for the player himself, look, last year of his contract, you've told him he's not going to be first choice. He's going to be sat on the bench. He doesn't want to do that at 32, 33. He doesn't want to do that at that age. He wants first team football. He's only got a couple of years left. And a move to another a good championship club. He'll be on good money still. It's a no-brainer for him. So I just think, you know, it just made sense for everyone. Made sense for the player's point of view. Made sense for the club. It's one of those. And we'll go on to Lyndon Gooch as well. But again, we'll talk about it then. But it's a sign of progress.
It is, yeah. I don't disagree with anything you've said there. I think Bart, from what I'm told, wanted to stay and fight for his place. But to me, I think if you're being honest with yourself, you've got to look at the way Sunderland are going with drastically reducing the average age of the squad. He wasn't going to play much, which it probably does sound bizarre to people. If you aren't a Sunderland fan and you're talking about somebody who was your player of the year last year and you're sort of making excuses for moving him on, you know, probably sounds daft, but If you kind of understand the way we're trying to operate, then you'll understand why this happened. And, you know, I think, to be honest, especially in the last handful of games, 09 and Ballard have been brilliant together. You can already see that partnership works and it suits the way we play. And I don't think Danny Bart's become a bad footballer overnight. You know, I've seen a lot of people pointing out that, well, you know, last year he was an important part of a team which played good football. He can pass a ball. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is we're maybe looking a step ahead. And if we're being honest, I think it's going to be very tough for us to get promoted this year. Next year is a different story. And with that in mind, we have to basically use this year to gear up towards a proper push for promotion at some point. And that probably means there are a handful of players who they're not going to be part of those plans in a year or two. And why waste time? You know, why waste time? Start thinking ahead now, because I think we know we're not going to be relegated, we're not going to be in a battle, so let's think further ahead than just this season, just the next game. So that's why it made sense not only to move Bart on, but Lyndon Gooch, who you mentioned before. Gooch went to Stoke. I think that's about as good a move as he'll ever get. I think considering he had the option to go to Shrewsbury at the end of the January window when we got promoted and didn't go, he decided to stay and fight for his place, and he did. He got his place back and was a really important part of that team. I think if we're all being honest, Gooch, looking at the squad, wasn't going to get in ahead of Hume when he's fit. He's not good enough to play on the wing. He's not a championship winger. And the club had a deal lined up for a PSG 20-year-old France international with first team experience for PSG. You know, eventually everyone's time comes to an end, and Gooch, in his interview, which he did with the club website, which is definitely worth a watch if people haven't seen it, but he did an interview basically just talking about his time at Sunderland and his goodbyes and stuff. And he said this was all on his terms. It's the way he wanted to leave the club if he was ever going to leave and all the rest of it. I think deep down he would have loved to have stayed. But again, if we're being honest, his time was over here. And this is the best possible way he could have gone. Again, fit, ready to play, going to another championship club who may well have a better season than us this year. You never know. Stoke. He'll play all the time there. He's going to a manager who knows his game, knows how to get the best out of him. I think this is a great move for Lyndon Gooch. And if we did get £1 million for him, I think that's fantastic business by Sunderland too.
Yeah, and like I said, it's progress. And it's just a sign of the club moving forward. And the players who are here, it's good because in a way we're trying to drag these players up with the club, rather than the other way around. rather than the club chasing, trying to be as good as some of the players we've got. We're trying to drag these players up with us. And, I just think it's almost a casualty of that. And there's been no sentiment in the decisions that Speakman has made since he came to the club. I mean, I think his first summer window, he got rid of a 30 goal a season striker to move in a different direction. And he ripped up aside that finishing the playoffs to start again. And you know, getting rid of people like Bailey Wright, who people loved around the place, Winchester, Lyndon Gooch, Danny Bart. I mean, there's players in that time who were really popular around the place, but there's been no sentiment. It's basically, is this the best deal for the club? Yes, right? Well, that's it. That's the only thing that kind of matters when they decide whether something's good or something's not. And it sounds like, if rumours are true, we're getting good money for Lyndon Gooch. And like I said, he's made a move to a good club. But if you look again on paper, Dennis Sirkin, Alicia, Hume, Huggins, Pembele, all, well, I think Huggins and Alicia, the oldest, are 22. I'd deny anyone to try and find a better selection of fullbacks in the Championship. Five fullbacks like that. I mean, that is incredible, the depth we've got in fullback position. I mean, I think most of those five fully fit would walk into most Championship sides easy. And some of them would walk into some lower down Premier League sides, no problem.
Yeah.
So when you look at that and then you think, where did Lyndon Gooch fit in? Maybe his cover in the middle of the park, but that's not his natural position. Again, it's one of these we talked about, Danny Bart. If Lyndon Gooch kind of talked about it, best deal for him really in the long term, best deal for the club. And it's sad, but like I said, it's progress.
Yeah, and you'd like to think he might have got a bit of a wage bump as well. So he's moving away, yes, but he's probably making better money, and he's in a similar boat to the next player we're about to talk about, really, because they're a similar age. But Ross Stewart went to Southampton, and that one didn't go down as well with people in terms of, the player leaving. There's a lot of sentiment towards Barton Gooch, perhaps not as much towards Stewart leaving. But I think this deal in particular shows how multifaceted these transfer dealings actually are, because with Stewart, and Speakman said this on the interview he did, we wanted to keep him. First and foremost, our priority was keeping Ross Stewart. We didn't want him to go. We made him several contract offers where he would have got a significant pay rise. But there becomes a point where you've got to draw a line in the sand and move on, because he wasn't going to sign any of the deals they put in front of him. So the next option is, right, well, how do we get the best deal for the football club? And the club were persistent, to be fair. I'm sure they had opportunities to sell Stewart a lot earlier than they did for less money. And I guess our mantra was, unless you pay what we want for him, we will keep him until he goes out of contract. And Southampton bit and paid we believe it's 10 million, rising to potentially 12 or 14 with add-ons and all the rest of it. He is a fantastic player. I've said when he's fit, there isn't a striker in the league can touch him. But it's that what if, isn't it? Is Ross Stewart going to be as good as he was before his injury? He hasn't just had a slight strain or a niggle. He's had two bad injuries. The one he's recovering from now used to be a career-ending injury. And I know these days, with the advancement of medical science and all the rest of it, the rehab programs, he could come back and have a really great career and potentially play in the Premier League with Southampton, which is why they've signed him. They've signed him because they think he could score the goals and play in the Premier League when they eventually get back there. And I think he's got the ability to do that. But from Sunderland's perspective, if he's not willing to say, I'm staying with you and I'm going to sign this deal, because he's got a better deal on the table with Southampton, by all accounts, Southampton are paying him 30 grand a week. We were never going to pay that. It's just way out of our budget. And you look at everything, you weigh it all up and you look at these injury problems, the fact that he's soon to be 28 year old, so this would have been a big contract for him. He had whatever he signed up to, it's probably going to be the biggest contract he signs in his career. Weighing everything up, as long as it made sense for us to let him go, I was more than happy for him to go. And I don't think anybody can argue we haven't done well out of this. I think it's the most we've received for a player in a lot of years. I think someone said since we sold Bent, I think this is the most amount of money Sunderland have made on a transfer since we sold Darren Bent. I might be wrong with that. But we haven't made a habit of selling players over the years, have we, for profit? Let's put it that way. So that, yeah, this one just in the end made a lot of sense. And, I think it was Tony Mowbray said it when he talked about the king is dead, long live the king. Somebody else will score the goals. Somebody else will be the hero. We'll move on. And Ross Stewart will move on. And I hope he does really well. I have no ill will towards the bloke, but everything made sense in the end. And that's all you can do really, is sit here and go, we did all right out of this and we're going to be fine.
Yeah, no, you've summed it up there. I'm in exactly the same place. The ideal was that he stayed, but you can't deny a player, who hasn't really earned that much money in his career, when he's, like I said, when he's 27 year old, it's his last big contract. He's just had two big injuries. You're offering him probably, I would guess, a quarter or a third of what he's probably been offered, and if rumours are true and how much he's on at Southampton. So you can't deny him that. I mean, what's the next step? That you just hold on to him for a season and that what he mopes about the place for a year if he wanted to go, and you deny him that opportunity? I mean, it's almost like a life-changing kind of move for Ross Stewart, you know, that at this stage in his life. So you can't really deny him that, really. And I've got absolutely no problems. I think he's brilliant for us, but that's no reason to kind of harm the lad's kind of long-term financial, you know, stability. I mean, he's earned a canny bit from football, but he played for Ross County till he was like 24 or something like that. So, I mean, you know, he earned next to nothing. So, yeah, I've got absolutely no problem with Ross Stewart leaving. I mean, talking about the money, you flip the way that you look at it and you put yourself in a Southampton fan's shoes and you've just bought a player for 10 million on 30 grand a week who hasn't kicked a ball for 7 or 8 months. And it's a massive gamble.
It is.
It's a huge gamble for Southampton. And if you think we've taken that money, but actually, it was a massive gamble not taking the money. Let's say we didn't take that offer and Stewart broke down again and he was out for another 6 months. So mm-hmm. and then all the fans were going, why didn't you take the money? So they couldn't win. if Stewart, there was no way of winning. And I think the club have probably come out with a best deal. And the other thing to remember about Stewart last season, he not only had that really bad injury, which kind of put him out for the 7 or 8 months, we've seen him since February. He was also out between November and January. So he broke down twice last season because mm-hmm. he was injured against Middlesbrough when he got injured in the warm-up. And then he came back and then got injured again. So he didn't just break down once last season, he broke down twice. So if you put that into the mix and say we got 10 million for a player who hardly played last season, as good as he was, I think we've done all right.
Absolutely. I think, again, he did fantastic for us, but the important thing was, you know, We are dictating the terms of these players leaving is the important thing. It, again, this is the difference with the way we work now, is that everything has to make sense and we're in no position to put ourselves in jeopardy. The money we received for Stewart, you know, apparently a decent chunk of it's gone to Ross County, and great for them, it's probably going to set them up for a couple of years. But the money we've made from this deal, as demonstrated in the rest of our business on deadline day, we didn't use any of it. Or we were happy to sign players, whether Stewart left or not. We brought in players. They already had them deals ready to go. Some of them signed before his transfer to Southampton was confirmed. That's money we can use in the next window. That'll go towards maybe bringing in 2 or 3 quality players in January. So, yeah, I'm over the moon with how it all went in the end. Gutted he's gone in a way, because I think he's a cracking player who, you know, had he returned to fitness, could have contributed a lot. But at the same time, sometimes it's the right time to make a fresh start for everybody. And this is something we're going to have to become used to, good players leaving. There'll be one a window from now, I think, at least one a window, where we saw it on deadline day, the amount of clubs circling around players. I think Mowbray and Speakman have spoke about how many players were actually under offer from some of the clubs. And, you know, Ekwar had interest from Germany and other clubs. Dan Neal apparently was interested in Liverpool. That's one we're going to have to keep an eye on, because if he keeps progressing, we're going to get bids for these players and they're going to be too good to refuse in some cases, and it's just going to happen. But the important thing is that the wheels keep turning, that everything makes sense, that ultimately we get better as a result of it. That sort of way that Brighton work, where they can sell the best players and don't miss a step and actually improve. Everybody wants that ideal, and we're not going to get it right every time. But I think in this case, in this window, we've moved on players, got money for them, and done okay. Speaking of strikers, though, we might as well go straight into the incomings, and we'll probably blast through these a little bit quicker because there's less emotional attachment, I guess, attached to any of these lads because they haven't played yet. Mason Burstow came in from Chelsea. I've got to admit, and I'm presuming you're the same, I knew nothing about him when I seen his name come up. We broke that story on Rota Report, actually, the transfer news on deadline day about Burstow. And I didn't know who he was. I looked on Wikipedia and seen he'd played a bunch of games for Charlton in League One. And having dug through the archives a bit, I noticed he played against us for Charlton. When he first started out there, he got to move to Chelsea, where he spent a bit of time in there under 21s, playing in the England ranks and all the rest of it. But this season has been a bit of an announcement from Burstow at Chelsea, and I know they've not had a great start, but a new manager's come in. he was in the squad for the pre-season program they had and the tour around the world and all the rest of it. Played games in pre-season for Chelsea, scored against Dortmund in one of them. Then in the opening two games, it might not have been the opening two, but he played, I think, against Luton and West Ham, coming off the bench in league action. So he's been brought on and trusted in Premier League games and then started in the cup for them against Wimbledon. So he's got three appearances already this season for Chelsea, who, yes, they've not had a great start, but for the money they've spent to be getting games in that team certainly tells you that he's trusted and that they think he's got something about him. And in the little quote that Speakman gave when we signed Burstow, he talked about how we'd been tracking him for a while. He was right at the top of our list when it came to players we wanted to sign and maybe had to wait a little bit longer to get him, but we're happy we've got him. I mean, it's another project, I guess. You know, we haven't made any other loan signings in this window. Burstow has come in because Chelsea wanted to get minutes. Hopefully it's a mutually beneficial agreement where he scores goals for us and contributes and he goes back to Chelsea and they're over the moon that he's done well. But there's no real risk with this one, in my opinion. I think because we've got four strikers now, that this one, if it doesn't go so well, it's not a big deal. But you look at him on paper and you think he could be a really canny signing, couldn't he?
Yeah, it's like all of them could be exciting when you read up about them. But this one's, it's an interesting one. You know, for a lad who's just turned 20, I think he turned, I'm sure he turned 20 last month.
4th of August, I've got it open in front of us.
there you go. But yeah, it just turned 20 and being on the bench when Chelsea have spent, what was it, something ridiculous, a billion or more?
Stupid more money than anyone's ever spent, basically.
Yeah, exactly. But they've spent all that money and stuck a 20-year-old on the bench, and they wouldn't stick a 20-year-old on the bench for nothing. You've got to have something about them, and especially a new manager. You know, Pochettino, he's got to come in and kind of look at his players and think, you know, can I put this lad on the bench? He's not going to put him on the bench for no reason. So for a manager like that and a club like that to put him into the matchday squad and, you know, put him out there, is a good start. And yeah, that's the other thing, for a club like Chelsea to hand us a player that they might have used or might have been on the fringes of, you know, getting a few minutes here and there in their first team, I think speaks volumes for not only us persuading them to do it and him to come, but says something probably about the deal that,
yeah,
I imagine like you touched on there, there's going to be some things in there that Burstow, he's going to expect minutes and Chelsea are going to expect him to get minutes as well. So it's going to be one to watch, you know, where, how much he kind of starts maybe from the bench to start with and slowly comes in. But I think the expectation there from us and Chelsea is that he gets some games.
Yeah, well, when you consider now, you're talking about, and we mentioned it before, we've brought in forwards who can sort of play different positions. But with him and Hamia, you're looking at them, they're very much number nines who lead the line.
Yeah.
So his direct competition effectively is Hamia, who's we've been told repeatedly is a bit of a project that needs time. Where Burstow, he's English, he's played league football two or three seasons ago for Charlton. You know what I mean? He's probably more ready than Hamia is right now. So yeah. I think you're right in that sense. I think he's probably going to have been guaranteed, or at least been given some strong assurances that he will play more often than not.
Yeah, but this gives us the option, doesn't it? Last season, we didn't have those options of playing somebody on the last man to get him. You know, if teams play a high line, we didn't really have that option. This season, we've got the option of doing that or play like we did against Southampton, where you want more bodies in the middle to kind of protect the back four and win the ball back and stuff like that. So we've got a nice mix now of players who want to play off the last man and players who want to be on the ball deeper. So it's a good problem to have for Mowbray.
Yeah, and speaking of which, one player who we've been told will do exactly that, Naziri Roussin, I think I've said that right. Bit of a complicated deal, this one, but I think it's mainly because he's coming in from a country that's at war, really. So getting him a work permit and work visa and all the other bits and pieces that are tied in with these deals and maybe even moving money to Ukraine. I don't know if that's a lot of red tape. But the important thing with this one for me, because I don't know much about him, was that the club have actually went to the lengths they have to sign him. Because I imagine it's been a massive arse on. But still, we went through maybe a month of negotiations and paperwork and all the rest of it to get him here. And, you know, with this one, I think I'm actually more excited about this transfer than any of them. For some reason, I don't know why. I mean, there's been reports out there, scouting reports done on his data. I think he's a proper data signing, this one. He scored really highly last year when it comes to effectiveness in attacking areas across Europe. And I know he's been playing in the Ukrainian league, but third highest goal scorer, playing mainly off the left and through the middle. He can play left or right. He can play as a number nine. I think he did an interview with a Ukrainian journalist while he was waiting in Paris to get his work visa, talking about how the club have said they see him as a Firmino type, which they've done a presentation on how they see him playing in the team. They see him more as a Firmino or a Benzema, as a link-up striker, more in that mould of what you were talking about before, where we don't play with a traditional number nine, we play with somebody who can get involved with the rest of the attacking players. It really excites me, Rusin, and I think he's going to take a little while to get up to speed. He doesn't have great English, apparently. I know we've already got a Ukrainian kid at the club, and apparently in his interview he mentioned him and said he's been told he will have an interpreter and he'll be learning the language, but he'll also be buddied up with the other Ukrainian kid at the club. So it's going to take him a little while to bed in, but you look and he's nearly 25 year old. He's played in the Champions League. He's just came off the back of a full season in the Ukrainian top flight where he's one of the top goal scorers. You know, if we get this one right, he could be a proper player again. Like you said before, we're saying the same about them all, but he's the one out of the clutch that we signed on deadline day that excites me the most.
Well, you're convincing us, because I was most excited about the two French lads, but you're starting to convince us about the Ukrainian, about Rusin, if that's the right pronunciation. But it's another interesting one. But just what's come out of the deal? I mean, for a start, he's absolutely ancient. At 24, I mean, he's an old fella. You know, he's going in there like, you know, an oldie in that dressing room. But yeah, I mean, it was him actually. I think it was him who described himself as being a Firmino or Firmino or Benzema.
I don't know if it was my reading of the translation, yeah. But my take on it was that the club made a presentation to him, and they said that's where they see him playing. No, but I don't know.
I might have gotten it right, but I was sure that that's how he described himself. Well, you know, if all else fails, just knock him out, and when he comes around, he doesn't know who he is to exactly. Tell him he's Benzema. Yeah.
I would love him to be either of those players. It would be fantastic if he was.
You're absolutely right, though, that the lengths we've gone to get this lad, giving him a presentation and saying, this is how you fit into the team. And he was also talking about staying put for an extra year, but he had, you know, the coach kind of left and he was a bit miffed off at all that sort of stuff. But I'm not sure, you know, I think it was going to take some, you know, potential in the club that he was going to pick to have to go to. Yeah. I don't think he would. It wasn't just going to be any deal. He'd have to go somewhere to firstly play football and someone who can get him in the top league, because he was already talking about playing in the Premier League and playing at places like Anfield. So he's in a hurry to start moving up the ladder. And we made a big play for him, made a big pitch, gave him all the spiel, the presentation, and all that sort of stuff. So he's got a role in this side that he already knows what it is. And I hope Mowbray knows what it is as well. But yeah, just another one to add to the list. I'm just excited about seeing him get on the pitch.
Yeah, and then we'll round off with the last two, Timothy Pembele and Adil Oshish. And that's a name I struggled badly with on the Twitter space on Friday. But yeah, those two guys came in together pretty much. They flew in together. They did the medicals together. They were in the same car. They've been pictured out in Newcastle shopping together. Clearly, we've paired them two up, but you can understand why. I think they might have even been at Paris Saint-Germain at the same time, given their age. Yeah. I think Oshish is 21 and Pembele's 20. So they probably know each other for a while, even though they've came in from different clubs, because, like I say, Oshish was at Paris Saint-Germain initially. That's where he came through, and then moved on after making his first team debut for Paris Saint-Germain, moved on to Saint-Étienne, where he spent a couple of years playing every week in League One. In Ligue 1, in the top flight in France. They got relegated. He played a couple of goals in the second tier and then was moved on to Lorient, back in the top tier, where he barely played last season, to be fair. He only made 11 appearances in the league and even played a little bit for the B team. So something didn't go quite right for him at Lorient. But when you look at it, come through the academy at PSG, which is obviously a prestigious club, the biggest club in France, moved on, played two full seasons in the top flight. He's only 21-year-old. He's got, I'm just looking now, about 50 caps all in for France at youth level. Probably more because they only list them from under-16s up. Scored goals for fun for France at youth level. He's maybe more in that Patrick Roberts mould, isn't he? Of player who's maybe just lost his way a little bit, but clearly has something. And again, we don't know much about him, but when we were talking about maybe replacing Ahmad with somebody who's got a bit of magic and do stuff out of nothing, he looks like that type of player who can maybe take up that position on the pitch. And again, he's going to take time to bed in properly. But another really exciting player. They're all exciting, like I say, but he's another one.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited by these two. Really excited. But it fits the pattern, doesn't it? That these are the type of players who only really signed for Sunderland in the position we're at. You know, having spent 4 years in League One, first year out of the Championship, you know, slightly, you know, probably overachieving slightly. But these are the type of players where you mentioned it with Robertson, it was the same with Clark, where there's something gone wrong in their career somewhere. And it looks like, you know, with Pembele, it was an ACL injury. With Oshish, it looks like he's just lost his way. But this is the type of signing we make. And our pitch to these players is come to this young side, play football, and who knows from there, you know. Like, and the thing that plays into this, people are talking about selling players and selling Stewart on, and, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And Speakman made a real point of this or in his interview, that Sunderland need to be known for a club that are fair to the player. So these players come to the club and we just say, see how it goes. And those players come to the club trusting that if they do really well, and they might, let's say they have a really good season and there is an opportunity for them to move on, a Premier League club comes in or whatever, that we're going to be fair to them. We're not just going to kind of lock them in. And they need football. They need to get their careers on track. And we're known as a club who are fair to players. Then players are more likely to take a chance with us as much as we are with them, because it's a gamble both ways. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited with these two because, we look at how Clark and Roberts got their careers back on track with us. And these players have got, you know, a pedigree, PSG coming through with some amazing players the last few years. Still young lads. And if we can get those back on track, some of these players we brought in have got ridiculous potential. And but it's funny, after Southampton, you wonder how they're all going to fit in. And you're thinking of these five players that we talked about we haven't seen play yet, trying to fit into that team. I mean, we're in a good place.
Yeah. Well, Pembele, he had and I don't know if people know this, but he did his ACL in April of last year and spent a long time out. So really, I don't think we really would have signed a player of this ability had he not been through that, because he was playing first team football for PSG. He was playing in the league. He was getting Champions League minutes in a team with, you know, loaded with superstars, and then he had a bad injury. And it's feasible that had he not got that injury, he would have continued getting minutes in the first team, and he might have been their established right back. You don't know. So that's the gamble the club have taken. I don't think we've paid a lot. There's obviously going to be a chunky sell-on fee there for him and Oshish, but we've given him a 5-year contract. We're secured, so if he does well, if a club comes in, we're not exposed like we were maybe with Stewart, where we could have maybe ended up getting next to nothing or nothing if it had gone on longer than it did. With this kid, if he reaches his potential at Sunderland, he's going to be playing again in the Champions League for a top club, isn't he? And that's the gamble we take, is that, yeah, we might lose a chunk of money because of the sell-on fee, but we're basically taking him off PSG and saying, we'll develop him, we'll nurture him, we'll make him a better player, we'll get him back to where he was at. And by the time he's done at Sunderland, he's going to be playing at a really high level, perhaps, hopefully with us in the Premier League. But if it's not, this could be a player we make a lot of money from. And again, that's the excitement, is that you look at him on paper, he's potentially a top player. So, and it adds competition. That's the other thing. We mentioned it when we started talking about transfers, but Lyndon Gooch is gone. And I'm talking about a player who was playing first team minutes for PSG. There is got to be a jump in class and ability there, providing he settles in. You know, he may come here and hate it, you know, but for me, I think this is just a no-lose situation again. And he's got experience not just playing for PSG, but playing right the way through the youth system with France. He played at the Olympics for France a couple of years ago. He had a chunky loan with Bordeaux in the top flight. So again, I'm just keep saying, repeat myself, really all exciting signings, really. But this one, for me, when you look at him and you think, oh, if we get it right with him, we could have a proper player on our hands. And, you know, some of those lads who maybe feel a little bit safe in those fullback berths, now they've got proper competition. It's not like bringing in a nobody here. We're bringing in somebody he's not coming to Sunderland to sit on the bench, is he?
No, not at all. And like I said, I had these two French lads kind of as my kind of the ones who are most excited about seeing playing, to be honest, because I just think, you know, if these two get going with us, that can be, well, who knows where they can go if we can get them fit and we can get them back on track. But I mean, that's what we've got to remember about all of the signings that we make in terms of that kind of philosophy of how we're bringing in players, because every player is a risk, and because every player we're able to bring in who's had that background, there's an issue somewhere, whatever that is, whether it's fitness, whether it's form, whether it's maybe attitude in some ways, whatever it might be. You look at the players who signed. Elise was 21, 22, had never played a senior game. Ekwa, 20, 21, never played a senior game. You know, there's risk with signing these type of players that you have to do your background, and there's always going to, even if they think they can, there's always a question mark of whether these players can step up and get their careers back on track or step up to senior football. Dennis Sirkin had injury problems. You know, I think Huggins had injury problems at Leeds before we brought him in. You know, you could go through all the players we brought in. You know, Bennett bringing him in from Costa Rica, there's a risk there. You know, all of these players, there's a chance that they might not come off. But if you weigh it up and look at the potential versus, you know, is it worth the risk of giving them those contracts and giving them those wages? And, you know, you've sometimes, and I think the club just kind of go in and say, if it comes off, it's going to be spectacular. So it's worth taking the risk.
Lots and lots of positives. Nothing negative at all there, I don't think.
Well, it has to be after a 5-0 win. It has to be.
5-0 win, good transfer window, and a nice little break for the players, or some of them at least. Some of them are going off and playing international football. We'll be back with a preview at some point because we do play again next week. I don't know who against. I'm terrible for my preparation. We've got QPR next week. I see you looking. I'm buying time here.
Right.
QPR away, maybe?
Chef Wednesday coming up?
No, I tell you what, we're shocking us too. There we go.
That's
definitely,
right.
Definitely QPR, is it? That's it? Well, there we go. We get to play Gareth Ainsworth again, so that's nice. But we will leave all of the pre-match chatter for that podcast, along with whatever comes out of the international break. Let's cross our fingers and toes and tap every bit of wood around us that nobody gets injured and we have headaches. But I guess the joy is that if anybody comes back with a niggle, we've got options now, which we've discussed at length. So cheers, mate. Thanks for joining us for this bumper edition.
Cheers, mate. I'm hot. Glad to be finished.
Cheers to the listeners. Thanks for joining us as always. Make sure you follow us on all of our channels. Check roadreport.espnation.com and buy our book. The pre-sale link is on the top of the Twitter page. It's on the top of every article on the website. SCFC 365 is available from the Your Love Supreme store. So make sure you pre-order that. It will be out in October. Chris, this man here, has put all the graft in. So if you like Chris and you like his opinions and you think he's a canny fella, and you also like Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen, because of course all of the profits go their way from this book, make sure you buy your copy. It's priced at £10. And I think that's a bargain.
Just got to finish it now.
Finish it, yeah. Make sure you do that before October. Cheers, everybody. We will catch you later.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.